The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
To follow up on what Sue just said, I am going to be away because I'm taking my own retreat. I'm going to be sitting my own meditation retreat for 2 months, so I'll be away and arranged. Guest speakers for the entire time I'm gone, so of course this program will continue in the mornings in my absence. So the topic I thought of talking about today, over the last couple months I've occasionally talked about or brought in the theme of working with thoughts. I talked at one point about working with thoughts and meditation, being aware of them, how they catch us and how we struggle with them, but also to actually be aware of thoughts. And I mentioned that a little bit in the guided meditation, that thoughts don't have to be the enemy. When we bring that shift of perspective of, oh, this is something happening in the present moment, that's what mindfulness is being aware of what's happening in the present moment. And yet thoughts are that avenue through which we tend to get pulled into the content of the thought and aren't aware that it's something happening in the present moment. You know, often if it's a thought of the past, we're pulled into an idea of the past, or we're pulled into an idea of the future, or even an idea of the present moment. And so just that shift of recognizing, oh, this is happening now, that is a possibility in our meditation. And then I talked at one point about working with thoughts in daily life and exploring when thoughts are helpful and when thoughts are not helpful. And pointing out that if we have the idea that thoughts are a problem, or that thoughts are, that we can't be mindful of thoughts, then we really miss out on a huge part of our daily life in terms of cultivating mindfulness. If we just come into our mindfulness practice with the idea that thought's bad, you know, it's like, well, there's a whole chunk of what happens in daily life that we can't be mindful of. And it is possible to be mindful of thoughts in daily life. And in particular, it's really helpful to check into whether thoughts are kind of leading us down the path of struggle and suffering and aversion and confusion and greed, or if they're actually helpful. And I use the framework of checking in to when we're thinking, are these thoughts true? Are they necessary? Are they kind? And using that as a helpful support for us to be able to distinguish between thoughts that are helpful and thoughts that are not helpful. Today I'd like to explore a little bit more on the side of thoughts that are helpful. The Buddha, in the teachings of the Buddha, there's actually quite a bit of teachings. I mean, we look at, or we think often, you know, the Buddha taught about being mindful, being present, you know, and we really emphasize that. And I think it's a really great skill to emphasize, because it's kind of the place, or that if we're not here in the present moment, then if we're not aware of what's happening in the present moment, then we can't even determine whether a thought is helpful or not in the present moment. And so the mindfulness practice is kind of a ground out of which we then explore what's happening in the present moment and determine whether we should continue doing something or stop doing something. And so there's quite a bit, actually, of teachings in the Buddhist texts around skillful use of thought, reflection, essentially. And I just thought I'd just kind of highlight some of these rather than going into detail on any one of these. I thought I'd highlight some of them and then explore a little bit about how we do reflection, you know, how we can use reflection skillfully in our lives. So a couple of the ways, one of the key ways that the Buddha talked about reflection, using reflection, was, and I talk about this sutta a lot, I might have even referred to it a few weeks ago. It was a sutta, it was a teaching that he gave to his own son, his 7-year-old son. He said, you know, you need to think about what you're doing. You need to reflect before you do something. Is that going to hurt somebody else? you know, this is a teaching that a 7-year-old can understand. You know, think about what you're doing. Think about when you're going to take an action. Is that going to cause harm to somebody? And he said, if it's going to cause harm, then don't do that. If it doesn't, if you don't see that it would cause harm, then go ahead and do that. And then he encouraged that reflection continue while we're acting, to continue to reflect, is this causing harm? Is something happening here where there's harm being caused? If so, stop. And if not, continue. And he went further to say, and after you've taken an action, reflect, did it cause harm? I think this acknowledges or speaks to the fact that sometimes the consequences or the ways in which our actions ripple out into the world, we don't become aware of those consequences immediately sometimes. And so he really wants us to reflect all through our actions. Are they causing harm to somebody? I like this teaching. I mean, it's a simple teaching in a lot of ways, but it's also really challenging. I mean, it's a teaching a 7-year-old can understand, but many of us, I mean, when I read this, I thought, wow. Every action that I do, reflect before, during, and after doing it. And so it's a high bar, and yet it is something to keep in mind, you know, to keep in mind as we move through our world. And I like to encourage a reflection practice around our actions, to reflect perhaps back over a day or over a week. This can be something that we bring into our spiritual life, to consciously reflect the actions that I've done this past week. Has there been any harm caused from that? One teacher that I sometimes teach with, Annie Nugent, has a great exploration of reflection, and she encourages to remember 4 R's in terms of the reflection practice. Relax, review, reflect, and resolve. And I think the relaxation is really important. And in fact, she says, you know, if you're going to be reflecting on your actions in terms of did they cause harm, it's really helpful to start with relaxation and a kind of an orientation of friendliness. You know, that we're not doing this kind of reflection in order to feel guilty or feel bad about ourselves or to feel like we're a bad person. But rather, we're looking at this exploration to try to learn, to try to grow, to try to understand. You know, so much, I think, when we do cause harm through our actions, you know, it may be unknowingly that we've taken an action. Sometimes it's something that we just didn't understand. You know, it's something that we didn't know about the person or we didn't know about the situation. And so to reflect back and look at what did I not understand or what can I learn from this situation? There was harm created. What can I learn? So the perspective around our reflection needs to be held with this kindness. And starting with relaxation is a great place to begin. So just settling down, relax. Annie suggests, for those of you who this is maybe not the best thing to suggest in California right now, but she suggests taking a bath, you know, getting yourself into a tub, you know, nice and relaxed. And but in any case, find a place or a time where you can feel relaxed, and know that you're going to be reviewing the second R, reviewing your week. You know, just think back. What did I do this week? And reflecting, so reviewing what happened, and in that review, a reflection of a couple of topics. I've got a few topics. You know, are there any themes or ways in which you tend to get caught? You know, so as you go back over a week, or you know, it could be you know, every couple of weeks that you do this kind of reflection, just reflecting back, where did I get caught? Where, you know, and this reflection around harm or affliction is not only how did we create harm for others, but how did we create harm for ourselves? Or did we do something that created a sense of struggle in our own experience? And so we can think back over our week and begin to recognize, are there any patterns? Are there any themes of ways that I tend to get caught? And are there any reflections or supports that the Dharma can bring for me? You know, if I tend to get caught with around a sense of anger, for instance, you know, is there a way that I can remind myself or reflect on the ways anger leads me into actions that are not helpful? So that the Buddha talks about this as reflecting on the drawbacks of some of our actions. So in the reflecting, you know, think back and reflect on how the Dharma might support you. If you tend to get caught around things that you want to have, you know, to get caught around wanting to acquire things, then the Buddha often suggests a reflection around impermanence. If we're stuck or caught in the world of feeling like happiness will come from getting what I want, you know, then reflecting on impermanence. And then resolving. So in the process of looking at ways in which we've caused harm or ways in which affliction has come about, you know, looking at, are there things that I could do differently next time? So resolve to see if it might be possible to not have a similar situation happen again in the future. You know, I'm going to tell a little story to kind of illustrate the way in which this is a really helpful practice. Again, not to beat ourselves up or to feel a sense of shame around what we're doing, but to kind of look at it as a learning or an understanding. You know, what can I learn from this situation? What do I not know that led me to do that? I think sometimes when we're reflecting back on something and we see, oh, there was harm caused, you know, that person got really upset with that thing that I said or did, we might look back and think, well, gosh, but you know, I was really acting from a really kind place. So I don't see, you know, what I did wrong there. You know, so this is one of the powers, I think, of this kind of reflection, is that it can help us to uncover ways in which we're not seeing something. So we take an action, we do it perhaps out of a sense of kindness or a sense of wanting something beautiful or wonderful for that person, and yet there's harm that's created. And so rather than just putting it on the other person and saying, well, it must be their problem. You know, it must be their problem that they're reacting. And certainly that's a piece of the puzzle. I mean, it is a piece of the puzzle that everybody has their own reactions, everybody has their own issues that they need to work out. You know, it could be that the way that you said something reminded them of something, you know, that their mother said when they were five, and it's like, you know, sending them into a reactive mode around that. And there's not a lot we can do about some of those kinds of reactions. some kinds of those things. And yet, the Buddha suggests that we check, you know, is there something I didn't understand? And so the story is, it's something I heard on NPR. It's a story I heard on, well, actually, no, I saw it on, it was This American Life, but it was the TV version of This American Life, not the radio version. And the story was about an improv group called Improv Everywhere, and they did kind of, and they still do, actually. I think they're still out there doing all kinds of funny things. You know, they will do things like a couple of the kinds of things that they described on the program where they would, you know, on a random subway car, they'd have all of these people there suddenly throwing a birthday party, you know, giving out hats to people, giving people, you know, horns to blow, and they get the whole car involved in a birthday party. And so they have all of these what are called agents, you know, that go in and create an experience in a public place, usually in a public place. So that's one example. I mean, they'll do things like this, like in a park, suddenly they'll have everybody freeze into a particular position for 5 minutes, you know. So you get this kind of statue effect in a park. So that kind of thing that they do. And these are, they're improv, but they're also kind of choreographed in a way. There's a theme or a kind of direction of the event. And so in this one case, in this one event they did, they called this improv event the best gig ever. And what they decided to do was to give some small little band who didn't have much, you know, who was kind of unknown, the best gig of their life. So, you know, they picked a small band that was playing in a club in New York City, and they decided to have a bunch of the improv agents or actors come and, you know, really give this group a great night. That was their purpose. You know, that was what they were coming in there with. And so they, you know, they learned the songs of the band. You know, they you know, there was about 50 people, you know, 50 of the actors that descended on this club. And you know, so they learned the songs, and some people, when they got there, you know, they behaved just like, you know, people would if they were really into a concert. You know, some people were standing there, like, you know, with their eyes closed and mouthing the words to the songs, and other people were dancing and, you know, singing out loud, and, you know, and this band had a great night. You know, they had a really great night. And then this improv group publishes their gigs, their, you know, their things on the internet. And so they described this event, of what they did. And people started going and checking out the band, and, you know, and they got trashed, you know. And apparently, you know, there were maybe two or three other people at the gig other than the 50 actors. And so it got back to the band that what had happened that night was a performance and not true, not a true experience. And, you know, other things that happened around this, you know, people, like, you know, writing really nasty comments to them on their website. I mean, they became more public figures because of this publication. And, you know, they were devastated, actually. And then in the This American Life thing, they interviewed the guy that's the in charge of the Improv Everywhere group. And his comment was, you know, our intentions were good. And my heart kind of sank when I heard that, because he didn't offer any kind of sense of reflection on why might that not have been a good idea. You know, why, you know, and this is what the Buddha encourages us to do. You know, there was harm created in that situation. That those two, I think it was a small band of two or maybe three people, they were really harmed. You know, not, perhaps not directly by the improv group, but indirectly because of it. And so, you know, when I heard that and I didn't see a kind of a sense of reflection of this person, well, why might that not have been a good idea? You know, why is there something that, even though we had good intentions in our heart, was there something we didn't know, something that we didn't pay attention to? And there's a couple of things that occurred to me. I mean, one, the first one that occurred to me was kind of interesting. I just thought, you know, the other kinds of events they had were not targeted. You know, they were kind of just like whoever appears on the subway car, they're involved in that thing. Or, you know, whoever happens to be in the park, they're the ones that get to see this experience of people standing like statues. This was an event targeted to specific people. So, you know, to me, it's kind of like, maybe you should reflect that this kind of improv work should remain in the public arena, not targeted to individuals. That was one thing that occurred to me. And I was talking about this to a friend who was also a Dharma practitioner, and she said, the whole thing was based on a lie. You know, they weren't really into that group. You know, they had the intention to give them something beautiful, but it wasn't based on their true reactions, their true response. And so that's another thing to reflect on. What's the, you know, so yes, there can be a motivation of kindness, but is there something I'm not really aligning with here? And in this case, aligning with truth. So again, you know, I think not to beat ourselves up around it. It's like this was a, you know, the overarching idea of giving something good to somebody, that's a nice thing. But to look underneath when something has gone wrong, you know, what did I not know? What did I not understand? So I think this is important for us not to just assume that when our intentions are good, that that's enough. Because our intentions can blind us sometimes. So that's something to consider. And this, I think this practice that he offers, reflect before, during, and after, is there harm caused? It can help us to wake up to the ways in which we're blind, the ways in which we're not seeing. I think this can also be, you know, we can also see this, you know, in the realm of, you know, how we're blind sometimes to people of different sexual orientations or races, or, you know, just kind of acting in a way where we're not really cognizant of the differences and the, you know, different kind of cultural perspectives that come, you know, that we may dismiss somebody's perspective, and it can be very painful to have a perspective dismissed. I mean, I've heard. I'm doing a lot of reading about this topic recently. I mean, with all of the events that are happening in Ferguson, and I'm kind of trying to educate myself a little bit, and. I read this story about, you know, people who, you know, when white people go to a bank to get a loan, what is their experience? And in general, this was a discussion in a group, a mixed race group, And when white people go to the bank to try to get a loan, you know, they you know, get a form, and, you know, they, the person at the bank is, you know, kind of chit-chatting with them, and, you know, they're thanked for their business. And in particular, when African Americans go to a bank to try to get a loan, there's no chit-chat. There is more than one form. There are multiple forms to fill out, health forms and income forms and, you know, just lots of different forms. And they are not thanked for their business. They are told it may take a long time to go through. And so there's just widely different experiences that African Americans have in trying to get a loan and white people have in trying to get a loan. And, you know, in hearing that, you know, if you're having a conversation with somebody, you know, and if you just, you know, oh, gee, you know, I heard your, you know, how's this going for you? It's like, wow, this is really hard. You know, the person's not very friendly with me. And, you know, you might think, wow, that doesn't quite jibe with my experience. So, you know, maybe it's just that circumstance, or, you know, are you sure you're really, you know, it must just be something, you know, the person's just having a bad day or something. And so we can be kind of, in hearing the discrepancies or the differences in the way, you know, certain populations, and this might be, you know, sexual orientation, or it might be race or even gender. You know, it's like your experience and my experience don't mesh, and so there can be a kind of dismissal of, oh, it must just be, are you sure, so there can be a kind of dismissal of that, and from what I understand, this kind of invalidation of experience is very painful. You know, we may not see that perspective, and invalidating that perspective can cause harm in that interaction. So, you know, see if we can open to what we don't know, what we don't understand. What are we not seeing? So I think this exploration around reflection is really helpful for us in so many different areas of our lives and in our culture, in our society. I mean, reflecting on the use of resources, too. I mean, you know, reflecting on the use of carbon-emitting how much carbon we put into the air, and how big is our carbon footprint? You know, it's like we are, as a collective, causing harm to our planet, and, you know, to not just kind of say, oh, it's bigger than me. I mean, what might we be able to do? What might be able to look at? So, you know, this kind of reflective practice can really open us to not only our own struggles and our own personal interactions, but a larger picture of our society, our culture. So beyond this kind of reflection on harm, the Buddha also encouraged us to reflect on impermanence. And in particular, kind of one of the early or kind of one of the big reflections on impermanence he suggested is that we reflect on death. That we actually contemplate that we are subject to nature, to age, sicken, and die. This is not something we tend to like to think about. On the surface of it, it sounds depressing. You know, it's like, well, why do I want to think about that? Why do I want to acknowledge that I'm going to die? Why would I want to do that? But paradoxically, I mean, it takes a little shift of perspective, or maybe it's just getting used to the fact of bringing it up in our minds. Yeah, this may be the last time I get into the car and get on the freeway. You know, any time we get into the car and drive on the freeway, it's like, I heard this morning, you know, about accidents all over the Bay Area. It happens all the time that people get in their cars and don't get where they're going. So it's true, it's truth, that we can die at any moment, that we are of the nature to die. Our bodies are fragile. Our bodies are subject to illness, sickness, death. So reflecting on that, partly it encourages us to I think one of the biggest reasons, there's this statement, this poem in the Dhammapada, one of the kind of classical Buddhist texts, that says, "Few people realize that we here must die. Those who do realize this, for those who do realize this, quarrels cease." So it's a, you know, it's a real, it's like a wake-up call. It's like, you know, if I realize that, you know, when I am parting from this person, that this is the last time I'm ever going to see them, how do I want to leave that interaction? Does it want to be on a note of contention? So reflecting on the fact that, I think at one point there's a kind of, I heard about this conversation. I haven't read about it. Somebody else told me about it. So I can't say that this is true, that, but it's a good way of framing it. And this is a story about someone who had a conversation with Carlos Castaneda. Are you familiar with Carlos Castaneda? He's a writer that and spiritual practitioner who studied in the Native American tradition. And he was having dinner with some people, and one of the people at that dinner said, "You know, I just don't know how I can find my way into a spiritual life." And Carlos Castaneda said, "Reflect daily on the fact that you, your family, your children, your parents will all die in no particular order, and you have no idea when. You will soon have a spiritual life." That, you know, that contemplation is very powerful for waking us up. It really helps us to recognize this moment here now, this is the moment that I have. And what's the best thing that I can do at this moment? So it really supports the coming into awakeness and joy, actually, for being alive now, for being here now and being able to step into the future in a skillful way for however long we have left. And so I found that this reflection, far from being depressing, actually brings a lot of joy and liveliness into my life. So it's a, I mean, the Buddha encouraged it, and I think it's an important one for us to remember. He also encouraged us, I mentioned this a couple, a little while ago, to reflect on the drawbacks of, let's just say, reactive states of mind. You know, when we're caught in a reactive state of mind, when we're caught in anger or confusion or greed or pride or arrogance or irritation or frustration or procrastination, or I mean, just any kind of reactive state, to reflect on how this is not serving me in terms of true freedom and ease and peace in my life. You know, we I think often in our reactive emotions, you know, it's somehow those reactive emotions have fooled us into thinking that they're helping us to find happiness and ease and peace in our lives. They have, you know, that if I you know, am angry about this thing and I get what I want because I'm angry, or I convince that person that they're wrong and I'm right, then I'll be happy. You know, if we have that orientation of that's how happiness will come, you know, we will continue encouraging those states of mind. We'll continue encouraging that anger, that frustration, that irritation, that pride, that arrogance. And one of the things that you know, our mindfulness practice does is it really helps us to see that those states of mind, those reactive states of mind, while they may get us what we want in the future, that thing that we've gotten that we want is a fleeting thing anyway. It's impermanent. It's subject to decay. And then we're just going to have to get right back on the wheel of getting something else that I want, or getting rid of something else that I don't want, or getting somebody's opinion that, you know, having somebody think something about me. And so we end up just on a wheel of more greed, more aversion, more frustration, more procrastination, more irritation. And when we look at what that experience is, what is the experience of anger? What is the experience in the moment of frustration, of irritation, of procrastination? Often it doesn't feel very good. And so we're, you know, the drawbacks, you know, first of all, the drawback of cultivating or being angry to get what we want means that it encourages the mind to be angry in general. I mean, it's like whatever we think and ponder, this is another teaching of the Buddha, whatever we think and ponder becomes the inclination of our minds. So if we frequently use anger to get what we want, we are cultivating more anger in our lives. And so this is a drawback. It's a drawback. We may get what we want. We may bully our way to get what we want, but we are creating enemies in the process. We're having a state of tension in the moment that we may not be aware of. It's actually detrimental to our health to have that kind of, you know, tension and reactivity in our bodies. So, you know, contemplating the drawbacks of these states of mind, just reflecting on that, remembering this isn't so helpful. You know, yes, I've gotten what I wanted from this perspective, but at what cost? At what cost have I gotten that? And then I want to just talk a little bit about kind of another way we can use reflection and mindfulness together. And I think this is important that we, as we reflect, we are actually present while we're reflecting. Not just get lost in reflecting, but actually be aware in the moment while we're reflecting. And so one of the ways we can do this, it's kind of like practicing being mindful while thinking. You know, if you want to reflect on a situation, so that's the practice I talked about, you know, bringing up situations that happen during the week. You know, if you want to reflect on something that happened, so maybe as you're reflecting, you've relaxed and you're reflecting back and you think, oh yeah, I got into that conversation with that person at work, and it didn't go well. So in that moment, one way that you can explore this, a form of reflection, is to allow that situation, you know, take your time with it. Allow that situation to come up in your mind. Remember the person. Remember what you were saying. Remember what the person was doing, how you responded, how they responded. Actually think about the situation. Bring it up in your mind. Kind of take about a minute to actually recreate that situation in your mind. So you can take that time to think about it and then check in. How am I now? Because when we create a situation in our minds, It has an impact on our present moment experience. Our thoughts are very powerful. And so if we remember a situation, we will have an emotional response to that memory. And so this is a way we can kind of navigate reflection, bring up a situation, and feel into the confusion or the anger or the self-justification or the irritation or the pride. You know, feel into it. It's not like we're trying to stop that in the reflection, but really recognizing, oh yeah, when that happened, I got really self-justified and it blinded me to what was going on. You know, I wasn't really able to hear what was happening because I was so wrapped up in my own perspective. So through this practice of reflection, we can open to the, you know, what comes up as we reflect and learn from that. Because it's like a little mini, like, snapshot of what happened at the time. And we can see perhaps where we were blind in that moment, or see an emotional response that we didn't have, that we didn't have real consciousness of at the time. So this reflective practice, you know, it's kind of like thinking a thought and then let go of it for now. You know, it's like what we tend to do when we start reflecting on a situation. It's like we remember the situation and then we go into our habit around, oh, I should have said this or done that, or I got to convince them about that. And so we kind of get lost into the story. So what I'm suggesting is like pick a very short period of time in which to just like drop that memory into your experience and then let go of thinking about it. Let go of the, you know, the they should have done, I should have said, in favor of just feeling how does it land? What's going on? And then you could reflect a little bit about how might a Dharma perspective have supported me? You know, if I had remembered about impermanence, if I had remembered that we're both, maybe this is our last conversation on earth, how might it have impacted the situation? Or if I remembered that I don't really believe that being angry is the way to happiness. If I had remembered that. So, you know, trying to just look at what we can learn. So a little bit of the thought. And then it's like we can go back and forth. Remember the situation and then check in. How am I now? And you could check in again. Remember the situation and how am I? Would you like to try this now? We could try it. Okay. So we'll just do this for a little bit. So I actually like to encourage people in doing this. Start with just a... So right now, just think of the situation, just, you know, whatever situation it is that you want to remember. Just, I'm going to give you like, you know, 10, 15 seconds to think of that, but then stop, you know, just remember just the barest outline of it. Okay, so now we'll start by first settling the mind. Just give yourself a little bit of time to just connect with your body, maybe close your eyes and take a breath. Feel the feet on the ground. Feel your body connected to the chair. Just grounding yourself and just being here right now. Being with the breath. Knowing there's a breath. Breathing in, breathing out. Being aware of sound. Just being here for a moment. And now, let yourself bring whatever situation to mind that you picked. Let yourself remember who you were with, or perhaps you were by yourself, but just remember the situation, where you were, what you were doing, if you were having a conversation, any details of that conversation. Just recollect the situation. Maybe how you were standing, what your posture was. And now let go of that and just check in, how are you now? What's the experience now? How did it make you feel? What was the experience? What is the experience now, having recollected that thought? You might bring back the situation a little bit now. Remember the situation. And again, how are you in the present moment as you let that thought come back into your mind? What happens? What emotions are present? How is the body? Let yourself bring it back again for a moment, a few moments, the situation. And again, how is your body kind of interweaving this back and forth, checking into the thought, checking into the body, checking into the emotions. And now what I'd like you to do is to bring in some reflections about how might the reflections on impermanence, or how might the teachings of the Dharma of non-harming supported you? How might it have supported you? Whatever you're feeling is okay. In fact, opening to the feelings. The practice of mindfulness, one of the main supports of the Dharma. Is there any support? Is there a different feeling for you as you reflect on how might bringing in the perspective of mindfulness and kindness, generosity, impermanence. Is there a different perspective on the situation? How does it feel to bring that side of the equation in? Again, checking into your body, the feelings, the emotions. Interweaving this thinking and awareness. Thinking and awareness. So that was a pretty brief taste of that kind of exploration. Just curious, what anybody want to share anything about what you noticed in that? What's it?
When I let myself feel what happened in the incident that I was reflecting on, I got teary. Mm-hmm. I wanted to cry. I didn't cry exactly, but and it's because I have repeated the pattern of this kind of experience where I get frustrated with somebody and it's really not about what they're doing, it's about me. Mm-hmm. It's about my It seems to be about my need to be the center of attention and control.
Yeah, control's a big one.
Yeah. Control others, particularly in a meeting, which was where the specific incident happened. So, and then after I got teary, I start, for the very few times, I felt I didn't want to repeat that ever again.
Mm.
That was a really good feeling.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. And sometimes it is just feeling what's happening that is the doorway to change. You know, we're so much in our thoughts and in our what we think we need to do and not really connecting to what's happening. And so, you know, this kind of reflection can, you know, in a way it's kind of practicing being mindful in messiness in a time where we can kind of be by ourselves. And, you know, it's like, you know, if this exercise might help you to remember the feeling in the situation, then that might begin to allow it to transform. And so, you know, that is where the mindfulness is so powerful. But so often in our daily lives, it's hard to be aware in the midst of something so challenging. And so this kind of reflection can help us to get more comfortable with being aware in that kind of messy situation. You know, it's like, oh yeah, these are the kinds of things that come up. So, yeah. So I encourage this kind of reflection. And
thank you.
And it's time to stop. So it is, yes. Yeah, we record pretty much everything here, so. For a few minutes. I'll be here for a little while, and you can stay here as long as I'm here. So, yeah. Yeah, sure. Yeah. So thank you all.